It's arguably the single most important platform for content creators in 2026, YouTube. But the competition for clicks is more intense than ever.
Creators who are trying to make it on YouTube have a lot to consider. Titles, keywords, thumbnails, and consistency, and never mind the actual content. So our creators are asking, what do they need to do to succeed?
Whether you have 10 or 10,000 subscribers, there are tricks and tactics that you can use to build an audience that really sticks.
So don't forget to like, comment, and subscribe as we explore some proven strategies for success on YouTube. Hello and welcome to First Frame, where creators come for answers, brought to you by Tell a Story Hive. I'm Jennifer Park.
And I'm Cameron Zinger. And on this season of the podcast, we're diving into the practical and ethical challenges facing Canadian content creators in 2026.
With insights from emerging creators, seasoned pros, and industry insiders, it's our goal to give you clear and actionable advice you can use right now.
Canadian content creators need a podcast to call home. This is it.
YouTube is often called the granddaddy of content creation platforms, and for good reason. With billions of viewers worldwide, it's where trends are born, careers are launched, and communities come together.
But making the most of the platform's features isn't always obvious, and there's lots to consider beyond content itself. So how do you create videos that people actually want to watch and keep watching?
To help us answer that question, I'm excited to introduce our guests for today's conversation. First up is Robert Randall, the writer, producer, and director behind the hugely successful Yap TV channel on YouTube. Rob, thanks so much for being here.
It's a pleasure to be here. Thanks for having me.
And also joining us today is our first ever two-time guest here on First Frame. Corrado Coya is a co-founder of the Buffer Festival and a YouTube growth strategist. Corrado, welcome back to the podcast.
Happy to be back. Thanks for making me a two-time champion.
Excited to have you back.
As always, let's begin with some background. So, Rob, for folks who aren't familiar with Yap TV, what is it all about and what led you to create it?
You know, I used to work in the movie business. I was a first assistant director. And one year I started teaching acting workshops called the Young Actors Project. And having a background in movie making, I decided I'd make movies with the young actors in my classes. This is, you know, quite a while ago, just at the infancy of YouTube. And instead of burning DVDs of our movie projects for the parents and friends and family to have, I decided I'd just put them on YouTube. And that's how it all started. And I just kept doing that year after year. And eventually they started to catch on.
And your platform now, where does it currently sit?
We're just on the cusp of 2 million subscribers. And we have about 550 million views. So it's doing pretty well. We had a period of time when it just went really crazy viral.
That's incredible.
And Corrado, we got to know you back in season one when you joined us to talk about transitioning from social media to broadcast television. But for those that maybe aren't familiar with you, can you share a little bit about yourself and what you're up to?
Sure, yeah. I started YouTube back in like 2007, 2008. As soon as Google bought it, I was like, I'm in. And been doing a lot of like sketch comedy, short films, everything along those lines. And doing YouTube for so long in that early period of time was very frustrating because people were always like, oh, you live in your parents' basement and you film your cat. Meanwhile, like to Robert's story, like we're getting views, we're making money, we're doing big brand deals. And so I started Buffer Festival, which is the YouTube film festival, to be like, you kind of want to grab people and shake them and be like, look at all the good stuff that we're making. It's not cat videos. It's real short films with actors and scripts. And some of the stuff you're going to see is going to start to rival Netflix. And built up that whole festival to kind of showcase the world and industry people that good stuff like what Robert's making. And since then, it's been a lot of just hands-in on YouTube, growing YouTube channels and broadcasts and throwing events for YouTube creators and industry across Canada and into the States.
Yeah, it's really interesting to see how much YouTube has grown over the years and the type of content and the evolution of it just in general. So very cool area to be working in.
Thank you both so much for sharing. Now, before we get into what works on YouTube, let's discuss what doesn't. So Rob, starting with you, what's the most common mistake you see creators making or that you have made yourself when trying to succeed on YouTube?
I think what has not worked for me is when I tried to do what I thought would work, you know, and that would go from figuring out what kind of video to make or what kind of thumbnail to make. If I tried to game the system and think, okay, this has got all the things that are going to work on it, you know, my little checklist all checked off. Oftentimes that would not hit as well if I just did what I wanted to do, did what I cared about and what I felt I liked. That was when things would often take off.
I'm feeling the word authenticity coming in my brain.
Yes, authenticity. Literally, authenticity. I'd be like putting so much work into making a thumbnail and this has got to be so perfect and all that. And then, oh, it's not getting as much of a click-through rate. Let me just take a nice little screen grab and that does. And the same with creating content. I created one show called Clickbait and I thought, oh, this is the perfect one. It's got a star as a lead. It's got cameos from major influencers. You know, this is it. And no, but when I just, you know, let me just make an authentic story about a high school experience featuring these kids that are actually in high school and telling some real stories, then that would catch on because that was authentic. That was different. That was unique.
Corrado, what about you?
I want to build a little bit off what Robert was saying. Like it's a lot of people thinking algorithm, like, how do I hack the algorithm? Or how do I like game the algorithm? And if people just replace the word algorithm with audience, everything would work better. It's not, what does the algorithm want? It's just, what does the audience want? And as soon as you hit that pivot, everything kind of shifts. So got to stop thinking about how to hack the algorithm and just think, how do I give the audience what they want? The other thing, I think this is like a pet peeve of mine because I recently finished discussing this with another creator, is like tag stuffing. They would go into like the tag section or the description and start adding things like hashtag viral, hashtag for you page. And I'm like, this isn't even TikTok, this is YouTube. And like all of those weird tags to try to game the video into the algorithm. And it's just like everything, all that's just hurting the video way more than helping. So it's just, that what does the audience want? How do you keep being that authentic?
Can I just add on to that?
Please do.
I would even say, and I think it's good to know what the audience wants, but sometimes even more important is what do you want? That's where it started to click for me, is when I just stopped thinking about the algorithm, stopped thinking about the audience sometimes and just saying, what do I want? Then it became a more personal story and then people gravitated towards it.
Thank you for saying think audience over algorithm. We've been to VidCon a number of times and there's so much information that you get going there. But I sat in a session with YouTube and that was the one statement that this gentleman said was, every time you're thinking algorithm, change it to audience and it will change your frame of mind about utilizing the platform. And it is the one thing that has stuck with me for years.
Yeah, absolutely. And to Rob's point, it's like, knowing your audience is the most important thing. So like, for example, I started a gaming YouTube channel with a buddy of mine. And within 3 months, we hit 40,000 subscribers and 10 million views on an empty channel. Because we went, what would we listen to? What would we watch? Everything we did was just hyper-specific towards us as like a caricature, as a person. And every line in the script would be like, you know what? We don't find this that funny. No one that's like us is going to find it that funny. And it works. It so works so well when you start knowing exactly who your audience is and what they want, and you can tailor your video towards them, like audience, not algorithm.
Yeah, I like how you talk about making it for yourself, right? You're making it for your audience, which you want to watch it, right? So that's really important too. Rob, I know that you are a big believer in the three P's: passion, persistence, and patience, I believe.
Yes.
Why do you think that matters when it comes to YouTube creators?
That was the key to my success: passion, persistence, patience. So to break that down, A, passion, you got to have something you love that drives you, that keeps you going. If you don't, you're going to run out of gas. Persistence, that passion should drive you to keep doing it and stay persistent with it, keep producing. And to break the persistence down even more, you need to have a system, a formula in place that allows you to be persistent. So if your videos cost a lot of money to make, you might run out of gas. You might run out of money. You need to be able to work with what you've got and have a system that can allow you to be persistent. And then patience. If you don't go viral, will you still want to do it? Will the passion still drive you? So for me, that worked. You know, I was teaching acting. I was doing it year after year. I didn't need to make money off of it. I just was persistent with it because I had a passion for it. And that patience eventually allowed it to blossom.
I agree with you. You have to be passionate about it. If you don't have that passion, you know, what's going to keep you driving to make more content?
And if you don't have the passion for it, nobody's going to care about it.
Exactly.
Now, Corrado, you've worked with creators at various different stages, whether they're brand new or whether they've already gone viral and have a huge page. Where do you see most channels stall? And why does that plateau usually happen?
They tend to stall when they feel like they're making the same thing time and time again. And it's a combination of they feel like they have to. And so it's like, oh, it's another week. I have to do another blank video. Mm-hmm. And they might not really want to get to Robert's point of like the passion. And they're just in that, I have to do it. And people don't like to iterate on their own content or test and experiment and try new things. So a lot of times people get into that habit of, well, every time I do blank video, it gets X amount of views and that's good. So I'll just keep doing that. But what about the looking into the retention? Like, why isn't it more? Mm-hmm. Where do they drop off? How can you improve that video? And it's hard for creators to switch out of the creation mindset and get into the analytical mindset of looking into where can I improve this product and this video? How can I make it better? And if they can't make that switch, I find a lot of times they get stuck.
So if someone is getting to that point that maybe they're a little burnt out, is it better that they pivot to something else that maybe the audience isn't going to expect? Or is it better for them to take a break? And how would that potentially impact? Because I know a lot of creators are thinking, I have to go. And if I don't put something out, I'm going to lose my audience and I'm going to lose my momentum.
I'd say YouTube has shifted so much recently. The old school mentality on like, you have to upload 2 days a week, Tuesday and Thursday. And if you miss a day, the algorithm's going to punish you. I think that's gone. There are channels that only upload a video like once every couple months. And it's not even a consistent every couple months. And they do just as fine. Yeah, Robert. because I don't think the algorithm is now rewarding that type of consistency. It is rewarding the quality. So if a creator needs to take a step back and chill and rethink, I think there's totally nothing wrong with that. And they have the freedom to do it.
And I can build on that because I never followed that YouTube formula. I never uploaded on any kind of consistent basis through my whole channel's existence. When I had a video ready, I put it out. And sometimes that was 3 or 4 a year. Sometimes it was 2 a year. Sometimes it was 6 a year. It just varied. And I just focused on making good content and putting it out when it was ready.
Yeah. The only negative to not being consistent is you just lose audience behavior patterns.
Right.
I did a daily vlog every day for 6 years. Don't recommend. A lot of work.
That sounds like a lot of work.
A lot of work. Sometimes when you miss a day, you would get messages from the audience being like, I used to watch your video every night before I go to bed. And it wasn't there. And so I didn't know what to do with myself. So you do that enough times and your audience can start to break their own habit of tuning in. So that's really where the danger comes from more so than algorithm.
You mentioned analytics earlier. So creators have access to all sorts of analytics, comments, community posts on YouTube. What's the best way to take advantage of all of that?
Yeah, one of my favorite metrics that I like to talk about, and I forget what the exact term it is, but it's there's somewhere in the deep analytics of YouTube where you can see how many videos a viewer watches in a month. And a lot of time that number surprises people. Like I know some creators, they're like, I upload like 20 videos a month. And then I tell them like, what's this number? And it says, oh, the average viewer views 3. And I'm like, so you're uploading 20 videos a month and the average person is watching 3 of them. Maybe you should upload less than 20 and focus on making those less more.
Is there like 3 analytics that you maybe look at on a regular basis then? If you were to tell a first-time creator, here are 3 that I would go to. What would be your 3 go-to?
Ooh, that's a good one. First-time creator. So they might not have a ton of views. So I would say click-through rate, the CTR, which would be how often YouTube is showing the video to someone versus how many times they're clicking on it. And then the retention curve. Okay. So like it's a XY graph. And when it's like 100% is everyone's watching. And then when people start to drop off, you can see it on the graph. And that would be my favorite one, followed by just straight up average view duration percentage. So if your video is 10 minutes and the average view is 20% of that, then you're losing your audience at the 20% mark, and you don't need to be making this video that's 10 minutes long. You only need to be making it that's 2 minutes long, or something's happening at that 2 minutes.
Yeah, exactly. You'll be able to figure out why they're dropping off potentially. So maybe how you need to change up your content.
Yeah, the retention graph is my favorite as well, because I can see, A, when they drop off. I can see when they rewind and rewatch, which helped me understand that when I make a story that's a love story, if there's a kiss in it, I can see a giant spike in the retention graph there, which tells me people rewound that part and watched that again. It was their favorite part of the movie. So I know, okay, this is something really satisfying for the audience here. If you're trying to give them what they want, that's what they want.
Okay, let's put the YouTube conversation on pause for just a moment. Let's have a little bit of fun. It's time to play Pitch or Ditch.
We're going to give each of you 30 seconds to sell us on a new concept that you've been sitting on or thinking about. And we'll either give you a green light or a hard pass. Rob, you're up first.
Oh, God. Okay. This is a story I've been sitting on for a long time and never made because it requires a little bit of special effects that are often a little bit harder to pull off. And it's also more of a story aimed at guys. Most of my audience is female. This is more of a guy story. And it's called Wedgie Time Machine. So there's been Hot Tub Time Machine. There's been all these different time machine movies. There's never been a Wedgie Time Machine where a kid in school gets wedgied and that thrusts them back or forth into the into time. So Wedgie Time Machine. I don't have too much developed on it, but I've got this title and a concept. And then whenever I tell it to a 12-year-old boy, they're like, I want to watch that.
I see a underwear sponsor in your future for that. For that, then, if it's all about wedgies,
tidy whities. Right.
So, Cam, are you green lighting?
I'd want to see a little bit more fleshed out, but I'm liking the direction. I think it could be fun.
Okay,
yeah,
love it. Corrado, over to you. 30 seconds.
All right. So this would be a whole YouTube channel idea. It's about fake product updates, but it needs a better name. So, if for example, Google just announced that a new feature that is going to be rolling out to all cell phones, where all screens are going to turn off anytime you're within 1 meter of a movie theater. Another one would be like, due to decreasing attention spans, movie theaters are now offering shows at 1.5 watch speed. So you can now watch your movie at 1.5 speed.
I love it. I think that would go viral, and I think you need to launch it on April Fool's Day.
Right? It's a great April Fool's Day launch.
I'll green light that one.
All right.
Now it's time to zero in on solid, actionable advice for anyone who's trying to succeed on YouTube. We've talked about knowing your audience, but how do you figure out exactly what your viewers want and make sure your content speaks to them?
I have some advice. It doesn't directly answer that question, but my most actionable advice is to work with what you've got. And that's something I've tried to do, I've had to do. When I started, I was working with a group of young actors, so I had a group of young actors. I was running my acting workshops in a high school or a middle school, so as long as I was nice to the janitors in the evening, I had this school at my disposal. So that those are things that I had. I didn't write scripts that were set in an office building. I didn't write scripts that were set in a car driving around downtown. And that allowed me, like I said before, the three P's, that allowed me to be persistent and keep it going. And there was a million stories I could create within a high school setting, and I still am.
Corrado, did you have anything you wanted to add?
Yeah, I think I get that question a lot. And there's so many new creators that want to start. I've kind of been thinking about it. And I think there's three different things I would tell people. First thing would be you have to figure out your cadence, like how often you want to upload. Is it once a week? Is it twice a week? And then try it, but don't actually upload. Because a lot of times what happens is we get a lot of creators who are like, I can do 2 videos a week. And then they can do that for about 3 weeks. And then suddenly they burn out. So it's come up with your cadence and then see if you can do it and film those videos, but don't upload them and see if you can keep that cadence and use those videos as a learning way. So you're kind of giving it a test shot first while learning on the road. And second one would be, you got to keep to one niche and one audience. People are multifaceted. We all like different things, but you can't do it all on one channel. The more niche you can keep the channel, the easier it's going to be to bring audiences there. And then the third one, once you've got all that figured out, it would be your first videos should be ones that people are currently searching for. So for example, if you're doing men's fashion, you don't want your first video to be 10 fashion do's and don'ts. That could be a good video if you have 10,000 subscribers, not if you have zero. What's going to work for zero is making videos that people are searching for, like how to find pants that actually make you look good. That could be a good search topic because that's going to start to bring in the audience. So you want to target those videos first, less of the fluffy, deeper videos.
One more tip I can throw in there is to keep it relatively clean if you want to, you know, get advertising on your videos, drugs, suicide, too much swearing, things like that. You won't get ads run against your videos on YouTube and then you won't make money.
Thank goodness with us at StoryHive, we make sure that all of our content is G and PG rated. So there probably won't be any issues with our creators with that, but that's a great call out as well.
Now, once creators have their videos, as you're talking about, I want to dive a little bit into packaging. So how important are titles and thumbnails when it comes to getting people to actually click on your content?
The most important. So far, so much of the most important that I think titles and thumbnails is the first thing you do before anything else. If you have a spreadsheet and you probably have tons of good video ideas, after you have all your video ideas, the next thing you need to do is, what are those titles and thumbnails? If you can't lock in a solid title and thumbnail, don't even continue down the path of making that video. It's that important.
Yeah, I've got the project that I'm filming right now is called Rot Girl, R-O-T, Rot Girl. And it's about a girl with social anxiety. It's kind of like a superhero style origin story about a girl with social anxiety. And every time I mentioned that title to a teenager, their ears would perk up. So I kind of thought, oh, maybe I'm onto something with this title. I should like keep going with it. So I'm hopeful that this title resonates with the audience and gets the click-through rate that I'm hoping for.
Yeah. And Rob, you have a couple that have really strong titles. The one that comes to mind is Girl Without a Phone. I mean, you find a teenager right now that's not going to hear that and instantly feel that, you know, right, that feeling of, oh my God, could I imagine life without a phone, and gravitate right to find out what that's about.
Yes. The ultimate fear for a teenage girl, not having a phone. So it's funny because I put that video out at the same time as another video. And the other video was called How to Get Your Crush to Like You. And then I put out The Girl Without a Phone, A Cinderella Story. So The Girl Without a Phone, A Cinderella Story is probably the most popular short film on YouTube. It's got 124 million views now. Still gets like 10, 15,000 views a day. It's a funny thing about the title, because I always wondered, why did that one go viral? And yes, the title probably had something to do with it. The word Cinderella maybe had something to do with mm-hmm. it as well, because if you were someone on YouTube who watched a Cinderella video, The Girl Without a Phone, A Cinderella Story might then get recommended to you.
Right.
Because it thinks you're into Cinderella stories.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe on YouTube too, you can do testing, like A-B testing yes. with your title. So it's obviously important if YouTube's even created it so that you can test different titles and different thumbnails to see which one works better to drive people to your site and to click on your videos, correct?
Yeah, I love that one. So my recent video, the Tell a Story Hive movie that I made called Boy Meets Girl, I tested out 3 different titles. I tested out Boy Meets Girl. I tested out Boy Meets Girl Romantic Comedy. And I tested out Boy Meets Girl Gender Fluid Rom-Com, because it's about a gender mm-hmm. fluid, has a gender fluid main character. And do you guys want to guess which one did better?
They all have good potentials.
I'm going to go C. I'm going to go the last one.
Yeah. Last one?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm going to go B. I'm going to go B.
Jennifer, what do you think?
I think just Boy Meets Girl.
There we go. Yeah. We got the gambit.
Boy Meets Girl Gender Fluid Rom-Com outperformed the other two by quite a bit.
Yeah, nice.
And it also helped it find its niche audience. Like some of the comments from people who identify on the gender spectrum there found it, clicked on it right away, and engaged with it and created a lot of engagement. So I really like that testing feature that YouTube offers for the titles and the thumbnails.
Titles and thumbnails aside, there's also a lot going on behind the scenes with metadata, tags, keywords, etc. So do you have any advice for creators there? Corrado, I'll throw this over to you.
Ooh, for the metadata? Okay. So with tags, YouTube has straight up said they're one of the least important things on a YouTube video.
Good to know.
Yeah, they straight up, there was a whole video they made. They're like, it doesn't matter as much as you think. On the spectrum of things that matter, it's right near the bottom. But there's still a lot that you can do with tags to make them valuable, like putting in misspellings. So for example, if your video is about Justin Bieber, you could put Justin Bieber, because I will always get a name wrong. As much as I tell myself it's one way, I'll always think it's the other way. So by putting in those misspellings, you're capitalizing on those extra search terms. And then the other way I like to look at it is, how would you describe the video if you don't remember what it's called? Like if it was about Tony Hawk, and you're like, I can't remember the name of the video or what Tony Hawk's name is, words you would use to describe it. Like you're at the bar, and you're like, I watched this video with that skateboard guy. You can put skateboard guy as a tag. All those search terms that would lead up to the overall video. And then when it comes to description, your first sentence or two is going to be the most important. So there's a lot of people, they'll fill their description with 5,000. I think 5,000 characters is how long you can go. Fine. But YouTube's going to care the most about the top chunk. So whatever's in that top chunk is going to be the most important, and it's going to get diminishing returns for everything down.
Okay, to sum up everything that we've talked about today then, what would you say to a creator who asked, how do I make YouTube work for me?
First, you need to answer, what do you want to make for YouTube? What is it for the audience would be number one. And what can you make that's good for you, but also good for them? And can you identify who them is? Do you know who that audience is? And what can you make for them that's also for you?
I would simply say, what do you enjoy? What are you passionate about? Find your passion, follow your bliss, and then, you know, research what's been done out there for what it is you're interested in. Find a fresh perspective on it, because it's all been done, but get creative. What if you did the opposite of what someone's doing?
Yeah. And I'm hoping that is slowly starting to resonate with our audiences for the podcast, because even in season one, we kept hearing, find your passion, talk about what you're passionate about, and showcase that in your content. So I think it's really great advice.
Guys, you've shared a lot of great advice, but before we say goodbye, are there any resources that you'd recommend for our creators who want to learn more? And also, how can they keep up on what the both of you are doing?
Well, I make films. I work with actors, do a lot of writing. And sometimes I have people ask me, how did they become filmmakers and stuff like that? And sometimes they're very young people. They're just coming out of high school, or maybe they're still in high school. And I like to tell them to do what I did when I was that age. And I took a creative writing class. And that was my favorite class in high school. And without that, I probably wouldn't be doing what I'm doing right now. Writing is so important to becoming a creator, because it's where it all starts. So learn how to write and try not to rely on AI. AI can be a tool that can help you out, but you gotta just get into the roots of it, read some books on story and write. And also, just to reiterate, work with what you've got.
And how can people keep up with you?
Oh, and people can keep up with me. You can find my YouTube channel, just Yap TV, YAPTV, Yap TV. You can search that up on YouTube. You can search it up on Instagram. You can search it up on TikTok. We are out there, Yap TV. Smash that subscribe button.
Corrado?
Yeah, I say I'm going to give some specific names. If you're trying to become a YouTuber and you're trying to grow, I really suggest you look into these two creators, Colin and Samir. Their stuff is amazing. Yep. They're good people. I've known them for a long time. Their stuff, every time I watch one of their videos and one of their learnings, I'm just like, they're so good. They get it. Finding people like that, that you can watch and lean into, is going to be really key. If you think I'm one of those people, you can find me on just my name, Corrado Coya. It's pretty unique. I get all the handles. I'm the only one. And I do have my own website called Canadian Creator. And you can get my newsletter there. And I give you bi-weekly tips on all the cool things about YouTube.
That's a good site.
Perfect. Well, thank you both for sharing. And I know our audience is going to appreciate all of those recommendations. And we want to thank you both for joining us today on First Frame.
Thank you very much for having us.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Boy, we've come a long way from the days when Charlie Bit My Finger was the peak of YouTube success. I think my biggest takeaway from today is understand what your audience wants to watch and use your analytics to really understand when they're watching, when they're dropping off, and understanding their viewing habits can really help drive the success of your YouTube channel. What about yourself though, Jen?
Well, I think my takeaway is really stick to what you know. Stick to what you love. Make sure you're putting that out. It's less about making something for your audience, but creating something that you love and your audience will follow. And if you are putting out that type of content, just ensure you've got a really strong title. You've got really strong thumbnails that are going to make people want to click on and watch your video. That's it for this episode of First Frame, brought to you by Tell a Story Hive. Thanks so much to you, our viewers and listeners, for joining us.
Please hit follow so you don't miss a thing. And if you'd like to learn more about how Tell a Story Hive can help you along your content creation journey, check out storyhive.com.
Until next time, I'm Jennifer Park.
And I'm Cameron Zinger. That's a wrap.